Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio Presents OPA number 132. This is Kevin DeFrango. Sitting beside me is Ken Phillips. What's going on, good sir?
Hey, it's a Memorial Day edition, I guess, we're recording it at least. It looks like it's going to be a busy schedule this week, so for once we were a little bit planning ahead and decided to record early when there was a little bit of free time, so.
Yeah, and I'm completely fine with not, I would normally be typing away, doing my column currently, but though I have not made a pivot to video so much, I'm okay with more podcast and more artwork on the site, which is where I will be, you know, moving things.
Yeah.
And plus, Raw kind of sucks right now. Although we did just watch it, and that opening segment was pretty solid, in my opinion, with Brock Lesnar continuing not to make a decision on who he's going to cash in on.
And as someone who has been a little checked out from wrestling for a little while here, it was interesting to see the addition for the video screen, it looked like, on the ring skirts and the... The ring posts as well. It's nice to see they're still trying to innovate, even though that seemingly they are, you know, I guess a monopoly. The WWE, would you say, is a monopoly over wrestling? I mean, if you could say wrestling is, you know, something that you could consider that you have a monopoly over. It's sort of a niche thing, you know. It's like a monopoly over... Maybe peanut butter or something, I don't know. I guess you could do that.
Yeah, it's like there's Heinz ketchup and then there's every other ketchup.
Yeah, yeah.
Pretty much. Like, 9 out of 10 people, if you say ketchup, they're thinking Heinz ketchup.
Yeah.
They're not thinking that Hunt's bullshit.
If you go to a restaurant and it's not Heinz, I think there's a little bit of an eyebrow raised. Like even
I was not excited the other day when I got some homemade ketchup at a restaurant.
I think it was Paul Scheer that tweeted about that one time, about how every restaurant's homemade ketchup sucks.
I disagree with that, because I have had good tasting ones. I think a Bear Burger is an example of a good ketchup.
But then again, it's still, I feel like, a high risk reward scenario when you could just go with something that you know is going to be consistently quality with the Heinz ketchup versus rolling the dice and going with the homemade restaurant ketchup. I don't know.
Yeah, I definitely agree with the sentiment in most occasions.
Because when ketchup goes bad, it's really not a good thing, I don't think.
Yeah, I got, like, tomato sauce was basically what I got, and I'm like, no, I don't want tomato sauce, I want ketchup. There's just a difference in consistency between the two beverages. The two items, semi-solid liquids.
Yeah, ketchup has kind of a weird history, I feel like. I don't know if we've ever covered that on the show, but... At one point, I remember reading a Wikipedia article about it. It started from, like, India, as I recall, and was, like, totally different. Like, didn't have tomatoes in it for, like, the longest time until, like, after it came to America and became popular here, and then they added tomatoes. But it still was called ketchup, so I don't know. Or became Americanized at some point. So.
Yeah, I guess I have not necessarily heard that, but I'm not surprised. I mean, because there's definitely a difference between, like, Italian food and Italian-American food.
Right.
It's just two to, you know, because, like you said, like, there are some things that were not necessarily as readily available in the U.S. As were in Italy, so they just kind of... A lot of Italians modified recipes.
Yeah, I mean, General Tso's chicken, a lot of people think it's being Chinese, actually, was invented in this country. So there's a difference between the real thing and kind of, you know, the American version of that thing. So yeah. It's kind of interesting. But I don't even know, Kevin. We're just off to the races already this week. must be that extra day of rest that we got this weekend.
Oh, yeah. I got 0 days of rest. So, and this is just the topper. This is the least hard thing to do. Because the wife was like, oh, don't fall asleep doing it. I'm like, that'd be pretty weird to fall asleep while podcasting.
I mean, that would be tough, I think, for me to carry the show by myself if you've had fallen asleep. I mean, I can go for a little while, but it's nice to have someone to kind of bounce back ideas from, you know?
Yeah, because I've only found myself doing the solo shows a handful of times. Again, being lazy and not wanting to write anything. When I do the local shows, like, I'm like, oh, fuck that. I'm not doing a write-up anymore. I have notes that I take, like, in my little notepad program. And then I just do a short podcast on this show. Not that there hasn't been too many recently, and I had to miss the one event that that happened recently.
Gotcha.
Timing just kind of sucks sometimes.
Yeah, so I forgot what we were talking about to get on that subject.
We were talking about not really having an easy 4-day weekend. And I know that you traveled, so that always makes things not easy inherently.
Yeah, I did drive about 12 hours total, I guess. Well, 10 hours total. There were some stops thrown in there, of course, as happens. But it was a nice trip all the same. Always nice to visit with the fam back home, so that was fun.
Well, hopefully you did not have to drive to a weird parking lot to pick up an insulin device, Ken.
I did not, and you know, I am thankful in that I do not need an insulin device, but I was reading an article, Kevin, strange coincidence that you would mention that.
Yeah, I think that segue gets maybe a C at best.
Yeah, that's generous.
Okay, I was gonna go C minus.
This was an interesting one because I kind of like the idea of, you know, hacking devices and kind of having them do something else that they weren't necessarily designed for. But this story actually is more than just sort of like a
we have
a geeky
few biohacking shows too.
Well, this would go in with that for sure, because
this is definitely it is kind of a low-grade biohack in some ways.
Well, it's some of the other biohacking stuff was just sort of, I guess, biohacking just a biohack, like putting like lights or displays under your skin or something like that. That's not really something that's just going to be, you know, that's definitely elective surgery there. This was more of a life-saving treatment story, which is, as you said, as you alluded to, Kevin, people who need insulin regulate their diabetes. And I hadn't realized this, but in this day and age, the majority of people are having to, like, count the calories that they're eating and then, like, calculate how much insulin they're going to need in order to be able to process that food that they've eaten. So they've always got to be thinking about what they're eating, you know, how much insulin they need to be taking. Like, it does kind of seem a pain, to put it that way, I guess. But more than that, I think it's like something that's kind of taking you out of enjoying life in some ways, like, because you're kind of always having to be thinking about that in the back of your head, maybe. People have found that there is a way to modify an earlier model of the insulin pump that is used to deliver insulin And as you said, normally it would be a manual thing where you would calculate the amount of insulin that you needed and then dispense it with the pump.
That is pretty crazy. That'd be tough to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just always be kind of aware of what you're eating and how much you need to be kind of offsetting that. But people have come up with a sensor device that will, if I'm remembering this correctly, Kevin, detect your blood sugar levels.
Because evidently it says the hardware components of a DIY artificial pancreas. So I believe that is the portion of your body that normally controls natural insulin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, that's what this machine basically is it's kind of creating you an artificial pancreas because you can just eat the food and it will adjust the dosage that it releases into your system, in accordance to what you ate.
So it's able to monitor your blood sugar levels and adjust your insulin accordingly. So it sounds scary too, because some of the stories that people have said in there is that they've had to wake up in the middle of the night and give themselves insulin, or, their spouse has had to because they've gone into, shock or something from not having enough insulin. Or not having it, or they'll have to eat something sugary too. I've seen people saying that if their blood sugar goes too low.
Yeah.
If they have too much insulin. So it's, would eliminate that because it's able to be running even while they're sleeping and monitoring their blood sugar levels just to keep things even. So it's pretty amazing, but I guess due to the, I'm not exactly sure if I recall what the forces were that were stopping people from actually producing these to be sold openly on the regular medical market. But people have found a way to connect the sensors to an older model pump that they're, I think, able to connect to using Bluetooth to control.
Yeah, that is correct. At least that part. I'm trying to scroll through to figure out who is not allowing this.
Because they're able to connect to this with Bluetooth. I think they have to maybe disable some option in the firmware or, a security setting or something like that. But to me, this would seem like a real godsend if I had diabetes and needed something like that, a pump to... maintain my, maintain your life, really.
Yeah, because this was another thing that you were talking about, all the things that they need to do. Taking a hot shower could affect insulin absorption. That was something that I was not aware of because I do not have said problem.
Right.
And this was for type 1 diabetes, if I'm not mistaken, also, yes.
Hmm. Yeah, so this has created a secondary market for these insulin pumps, and they are going for fairly big dollars on eBay, but it did sound like people were kind of not wanting to feed the flames of bidding wars or to kind of go along with excessive prices. They feel like it shouldn't be about charging the most money you can. It should be, these should be accessible, to lots of people, even if they're not rich, does that make sense to really do that? Try to make the most money you can off of some kind of, a life-saving device. I don't know.
Yeah, it's always one of those things that a lot of people get in trouble for charging. And I mean, that's one of the reasons why I guess I'm not surprised that this type of a market exists. Because it does seem like there are a number of different instances where people try to do things, you know, a cheaper way. Because who is, because having a couple of different big pharmacy companies gotten a lot of shit for charging too much for some life-saving
Well, there was everybody's favorite pharma bro, Martin Shkreli there.
Yeah.
And you're right, there was a couple other instances, I believe. And that was supposedly something that was going to get worked on by the by our, you know, wise government, but has not come
not
about.
Happened yet.
Yeah. Something to address the high drug prices.
Yeah.
But anyway, we'll see. So I'm sure that's coming down the pike anytime.
I guess with things like that, though, I suppose I'm not surprised that people are finding a black market to kind of, you know, do this kind of looping stuff. You know,
oh, and just, that's what it's called, we should say. The process of monitoring your blood sugar automatically with one of these devices. And I think it's actually might be controlled by a smartphone or something like that, that is kind of being used as the processing power. Don't quote me on that one, but it's called looping because it's like a feedback loop between the sensor that's detecting your blood sugar and the pump that is dispensing the insulin. So it's able to like predict and know how much it needs to be dispensing at any time.
Oh yeah, because the code that helps run it was created by Dana Lewis and Scott Liebrand, and they shared the code for free so that people could use it.
Yeah, and that is really a neat thing that you can do, I guess, with software. Like, it's really a lot harder to share your hardware for free at this point because, you know, it costs some money to, like, produce each piece of hardware that you're producing. So, like, they can't really give the pumps away to everybody who wants one.
Oh.
But with the software, like, you can give away your work to everybody who wants one, which is kind of a nice thing about it.
Yeah.
If you're, you know, wanting to be, you know, cool and, like, help people live better lives and, you know, all that jazz. Yeah, I'm not exactly sure what it is that was causing the hold up here. Maybe getting approval.
Oh, yeah, because FDA approved a looping system for Medtronic called Minimede 670G in 2016. The reason why they went with the DIY setup was the patients did was to give themselves more flexibility in setting their target blood sugar.
Oh, okay. So it's not like locked in on one blood sugar level, I guess.
Right.
They got more control. That makes sense. And I think they cost more. It said the going price for one of the older pumps was about $500. Sometimes they said that they'll see posts for $1,000 to $3,000, and the community members are like, no. But the price for a new Medtronic pump runs for over $7,000.
Yeah. So. I mean, again, like... Yes, that's pretty crazy, the disparity in pricing.
I mean, if you could get something for $500 that would do a better job than something that you're going to pay $7,000 for, because like you said, you're able to control more of the target blood sugar level.
Right. And I would imagine that people have a range more than just having a hard target, but that is something that I did not particularly look into either.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I don't understand why that shit's... I understand that people did that much, or that there's a lot of research involved in trying to get this stuff on the market, but...
Yeah.
it still always seems a little excessive for what you know, what it ends up coming out as.
Yeah, I mean, to me, if you want to talk about whatever socialism, it makes the most sense for it to encroach towards healthcare, because that's like something that people like need, right? It's not like they're you're handing out cars like Oprah or something, you know.
Yeah, it's one thing to do that. It's another thing to, yeah. I mean, it's kind of like driver's insurance.
So it just seems like, why would you have people like trying to make money off of people's life and death? You know, I don't know. It seems a little not cool. But then again, you could say the same thing about Investigation Discovery, I would say, in terms of profiting off of people's deaths and murders and things like that. I think I saw that they had some kind of cruise coming up.
That stuff is really popular, and I guess there are a lot of women that like listening to true crime podcasts. Because I had to laugh when we went to visit the Richmond Virginianers the previous weekend. The youngest niece was listening to This Is Crime. Like, she said that she didn't listen to any podcast, but then she got hooked on this crime podcast. So I just kind of laughed that I had heard that women follow it, and then my 18-year-old niece.
That's funny, because I know
is following one of them.
I worked with a woman at another job who was a listener to those podcasts, but I think that there's a few, there might even be one or two in Columbus here, Kevin, if I'm not mistaken. crime podcasts. But some people, I could see the draw of it, I think. Like, I have watched, you know, those, whatever, Nightline specials occasionally.
Yeah, I cannot deny that. I'm almost a little surprised. I've started listening to more podcasts in general at work, because I'm not having to answer as many questions, so I end up getting through material a little bit more. And I have not picked up a crime podcast. Like, I still like a lot of comedy stuff for the most part.
Gotcha. Yeah, I don't listen to a lot myself either, but I can see the draw of it. There was just something about this, like, enter a chance to win this cruise, and like they were like superimposing almost like this woman who was like killed, and like she's wearing like this like tropical outfit apparently before she was you know, killed. It looked, appeared that she was standing, so I'm assuming she was alive at that point. But it just seemed pretty like ghoulish in some weird way. I don't know. Maybe people would see it more as a remembrance or something, but
yeah, it was like, I mean, some of those investigative ones, if it's a cold case and they end up getting some information, they did that. I forget who they interviewed on Unspooled. The guy did a crime podcast, and they asked for tips, and that they've solved a few crimes that way, which is still just kind of wild. All he needed to do was a podcast to help solve a crime, which is...
No, I think that's great. I mean...
Yeah, it's great. Still seems weird to me.
There's just something about how... Like, if you had told me that there was a true crime fan cruise, I would have said, okay, cool, that's fine. But there was something about the way that this commercial was done, and I don't know, maybe anyone out there, our listeners, is familiar with this particular commercial, but if you're checking it out, you know, let me know if I'm off the rocker here, or if this one is somehow crossing the line in terms of promoting murder. Well, not murder, but in a way murder, yes.
Yeah, I mean, it could fall under that. I mean, a lot of people, you know, say after the mass shootings not to concentrate on the shooter because it only helps breed more shooters.
Right.
You would think that if that mentality exists, then you know, to a lower level, getting yourself on 2020 or whatever the program happens to be that investigates the crime.
Yeah, I mean, there's like this...
There's some type of draw in there, right?
Apparently there's a whole channel, Investigative Discovery or something like that.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, it definitely exists.
Yeah, maybe I'm completely off the reservation on this one. I don't know. Just something struck me about that commercial.
Yeah, I wouldn't want... I might pick up a podcast or two, but I'm not going to be going on the cruise ever.
Yeah, I mean, you wouldn't. You say you wouldn't go on a cruise, Kevin. Would you maybe consider a artificial island in the middle of the ocean?
You know, it was kind of funny that this topic got grabbed. Because I remember talking to one of my coworkers early on at my office job, office job, and I was a little surprised for I don't know why it ever came up, but I was talking about buying an island and having my own country.
Sure. I mean, that's, I don't know, that's a pretty standard topic of conversation, I think.
I'm yeah, always I don't talking know why it that. Came up, but the woman was ready to move to my country, which I thought was very, very nice for seeing as though she didn't really know me that much.
Well, that could have been an early sign of things to come, I guess, Kevin. Foreshadowing, if you will. But, yeah, I think we might have discussed the idea of seasteading at one point.
This article itself just kind of reminded me of buying my own island.
Well, yeah. That is what it involves, Kevin. And in some cases, people are creating their own islands.
Yeah, which is pretty wild.
I think the most famous example of this was Sealandia. Which was this abandoned, like, British, I don't know, platform that was used for the military somehow, like a kind of off, way, way off the coast of Britain, and people just, like, kind of claimed it and decided to say that they were their own country. Now, it didn't end up going very well for them, because I believe that... it was like actual like pirates or something like that came and like seized the control of the place. So that's, I guess, part of the problem. Like, you are not able to really enforce laws very well if you are starting your own island, Kevin. That's something you might have to consider if you're not going to rely on the state to kind of enforce the rule of law.
Yeah, that would be the problem. The raising of an army. Even if I owned my own island, I would imagine something would need to be done to keep pirates away.
Yeah. I mean, there's a reason that there's very, very little land anywhere in this world that is not controlled by a country of some kind these days.
Oh,
because
yeah.
it's difficult to find that kind of the place. So it's a little tough to set up a shop. I think that's why some people are
moving to the seasteading.
Moving to, yeah, creating their own
platforms.
Land of such. As in February of this year, I believe. This was not in February. It was...
Oh, you're trying to find when the crime actually happened?
Yeah, because there was a recent case in Thailand where people set up a small cabin, they said, on a metal piling that was driven into the bottom of the ocean floor. A weighted spar, they said, actually anchored 12 nautical miles off the shore of Phuket.
Thailand is where we are currently talking about.
So it's a U.S. citizen named Chad, of course, and his Thai partner, Suprani Thet, a.k.a. Nadia Summer Girl. Well, all right. But now they're in hiding because the government of Thailand has charged them with violating national sovereignty, which apparently carries the death penalty.
Yeah, Thailand has some pretty crazy thoughts about when you should be killed.
For violating national sovereignty. I wonder.
Because I want to say that they were the ones that everyone was almost giddy when some American was going to get caned there.
Oh, that was when we were in school, I want to say. I remember that being a story back then.
Yeah, it was a long time ago, but I remember something like that.
It was controversial, because I think he was, you know, being a bad boy over there, but I don't think anything too serious. He, like, did vandalism or something. And, they ended up caning him, I remember.
Yeah, I remember seeing video of that, if I'm not mistaken.
Boy, that would really suck.
Yeah, that does not sound like fun ever.
So these guys could be facing caning because they're saying that they may end up being charged with a lesser offense. Because that does, maybe that might seem a little harsh, even in Thailand. But they are being searched for by the Taiwanese government, or Taiwanese? Thai government, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's just Thai.
You're right, man. It's the food that is called that. So, follows through with everything, I would think.
Yeah, it's one of those ones that's really easy to roll with because there's just like one word you need to remember.
Yes, the home was launched in February, funded by a group called Ocean Builders, who have their assets gained from early investment in Bitcoin. So that maybe gives you an idea that there could be some disaster heading up ahead, potentially.
Well, yeah, it just doesn't seem like a good idea in general. Because, you're still going to have to go get food at some point. You're not going to live off of ocean fish all the time. Right. Or is that what your plan is? Just to live off of ocean fish? Like, you'd have to take a boat in to get any type of groceries.
Yes. So you would have to have some kind of relation with the mainland. I agree. And they were 12 nautical miles, which seems quite far. But maybe not far enough for the Thai government, apparently.
Well, yeah, that was part of the disagreement. Chad was saying that they were outside of sovereign Thai water space, but the Thai government was saying that they had a larger swath of land than he was claiming. I forget what the numbers were exactly, but...
Yeah, at some point, yeah, one thing you would need, I would think, would be water, unless you're able to, like, evaporate it somehow to get drinkable water from the ocean. But that usually takes energy of some kind, which is another thing you probably would need. Fuel for fire, or I guess at best you could have solar panels for electric, you know, to do cooking and heating and things like that.
Yeah. But, I mean, that still takes some work to kind of develop that out there.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's going to be tough to be self-sufficient out there, basically in the middle of the ocean.
Yeah, it just does not seem worth it
at all. If you do get a good thing going with, you know, worth some value, you might become a target to pirates. So, That could be your reward if you get things going well.
Your reward, pirates.
So I don't know. It's possible that seasteading may not be the right way to go, Kevin. Although getting your own island, I don't know. Would that be easier to defend against pirates? It
was kind of funny that the first pirate, of course, to have known to tried to do some seasteading in simpler times was in 1967.
Oh, I wonder if that could have been the Sealandia guy, actually, because I think that was around that time. But yeah, that could have been something that was just in the zeitgeist at the time.
Yeah, this one definitely seems it's a little bit in the zeitgeist for some people that, like you said, maybe are a little well off and feel like they can get away from being ruled on by any government.
Well, unfortunately, Kevin, I think that is kind of becoming the de facto situation where people who have enough money can sort of become transnational in a way by having property all over the world and being able to kind of live wherever they want to.
You ready to be transnational, Ken? Is that the next step for the Phillips household?
Well, not for us. We're not quite that rich, so we're not the super rich who are starting our seasteading nations. But there's people out there who could probably afford security for a seasteading for real. And I think they're saying potentially for cases of global warming or sea level rises, that could be an option for people. Although that seems like a pretty aggressive option. I guess if you were, I mean, like we said, you would need substantial stuff out there to be able to support yourself long term. I mean, it would have to be like a water world situation to really justify it, I would think.
Yeah, and I have not seen Waterworld, I'm familiar with the reference only in the abstract.
I had been watching a video recently that was I think that it's a series, actually, but it was like titled WTF Happened to This Movie, and it was Waterworld. But I had no idea of all the drama that was going on behind the scenes on that movie. Like, the director quit. Like, they literally filmed it, like, at the ocean, and, like, they had to, like, drive the crew out there in a boat every day, and that, like, took time, and then they would have to have lunch there as soon as they got there, and then they could start working.
Oh, my God.
They were, like, constantly, like, having to reshoot because, like, boats were getting, you know, drifting and getting out of position for, like, their camera shots and stuff.
That is not surprising.
So, like, things were way over budget and over time. And actually, I think the movie turned out that it did okay. It's, like, famous for being a huge flop, but it, like, wasn't the worst, you know, flop by any means.
Well, and the fact that it's big enough that is it a Universal that has it? I feel like someone has a Waterworld part to their park, and I'm like, how the fuck did that happen?
I think it might be at Universal in Los Angeles, actually, because we were at the one in Florida recently, and they didn't have it there, but I think you're right. There's like a stunt show or something that they have for Waterworld, I want to say.
Yeah, so, I mean, it bounced back from, because I do remember it being called a bunch of dog shit, and maybe it is.
I don't think it's great, to be honest with you.
I had no want to watch that, and I still don't, really. Like, I guess it could be one of those, is it even a good, bad movie kind of situations where I take that in, but I don't know.
I think I can remember watching that movie and kind of wanting to see it, but then not even having the stamina to finish watching it. because it just wasn't... I mean, it wasn't like... I don't know. Kevin Costner had a very weird approach to his performance there. It was like so like deadpan and like no emotion at all. It was really hard to get into. Like, for a whole movie, when he's, like, the main character. It was a weird choice. But,
Do you know what else would be a weird choice, Ken?
No, Kevin. What would that possibly be?
Eating raw marmot kidneys.
Oh, you think that's weird, huh?
I would call that a weird life decision.
Well, we just had some marmot kidneys over the weekend when I was visiting my family, so I'm a little offended that you think that's weird, but okay. Yeah, I seem to recall hearing about this, though, Kevin. There was a couple in Mongolia who were eating their marmot kidneys, as one does.
Yeah, raw, as one does.
Which they did because of purported health benefits, ironically. And turned out that the marmots had been carrying the plague, which is unfortunate.
And ended up killing them.
Yeah, well, yes, which is doubly unfortunate.
Yeah.
And through this article, I guess we might as well maybe put our the people at ease who we've just maybe dropped some knowledge that the plague still is out there these days. It is out there, but it's actually not usually very deadly for people in the modern age.
yeah, it can be treated, which is why it is not considered anything too bad. And plus, there are a lot of other health precautions that one can take, like, say, cooking the marmot kidneys before you eat them.
Yeah, I gotta say, I feel like I would prefer my kidneys to be cooked. You know what? Is it weird that I feel like we don't eat the organs here in this country in general? I mean, I can remember having liver growing up, but it being like really super gross.
Yeah, you know, I've had some liver. I don't find it to be that bad.
It was not popular at the Phillips household growing up, I gotta say.
I have had it in very limited quantities, though, so...
Yeah.
But I do feel like all of, like, the Anthony Bourdain and Andrew Zimmern, I watched both of their shows a lot, and they made me more interested in those types of meats, but... They're still not easy to come by necessarily, and I don't know how to cook them either.
Right. Yeah, it's not really something that we've been exposed to. Mostly, you know, the muscle type meat is where we've, I would say, been culturally as a country. Is that fair to say?
I guess. Oh, come to think of it, the weirdest things that maybe I down, eat. I feel like down regularly, the south.
Is maybe more like wide open with that kind of stuff.
Oh, I was gonna say that, like, I know the Los Gauchos, they have a tongue taco that can get.
Yeah.
And they also have tripe.
Lingua and tripa or something?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen that.
It's a popular one, and I know I've had the tongue, and it's pretty tasty. I'm gonna throw that out there. I approve of eating tongue.
I just don't think I could get over that for some reason. It's a weird... even if it tasted good, I feel like it would be weird for me.
Yeah, it tastes super beefy, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'm not sure I could go for it. I feel like I probably would have been more open to it as a younger man, but... I don't know. Maybe I'm getting more set in my ways. It just does not... I can't imagine something good coming from that. I guess it would just gross me out. And the same with tripe. Like, I feel like it could be good.
But... yeah, and again, from what I remember at that particular establishment, I do enjoy it, but it's not something that I really... kind of care to eat on a regular basis. They have other meats to me that are more delectable than that.
Yeah. See, I feel like in this country, if you're, or at least we're in the Midwest, perhaps, that's probably a better way to put it. In the Midwest, if you like to eat dark meat, you're on the extreme, you know, the experimental side of things. Never mind, you know, organ meat. I know that they always, like,
give yeah, you... I got annoyed when McDonald's went to all white meat for their chicken nuggets. I'm like, nah, I always liked the little bit of dark meat that they had in there.
Mm-hmm.
I was a fan, so that was one of those instances where I was a little disappointed. But like you said, dark meat, not always terribly popular.
I probably prefer dark meat, so I'm a weirdo, obviously, but I just feel like it has more flavor. But
agreed.
Yeah, it's not something that, yeah. I feel like marmot kidneys especially is not something that is going to be eaten in the Midwest very often.
Yeah, and I guess other stuff that I've tried that it's been weird recently, it's just been, you know, it's a meat itself, too. Like, I've done rattlesnake, moose, jackrabbit.
Wow.
You know, things of that nature. When you head out to Denver there, those things are easily purchased at a number of locales.
Jackrabbit, that's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, it was hot dog place that I had the jackrabbit at.
But I hope there was no prairie dogs, Kevin, because speaking of which, that was something that came up in this article, is that the prairie dogs out west, I guess due to ships coming from Asia, they believe, brought the plague here to the American West and spread among the prairie dogs. And it still is active among them these days.
Yeah.
Which is why they don't recommend that people go near prairie dogs.
And your dog can contract the plague these days, too.
Yeah, so that's no good.
Yeah, there are any number of ways that this can go down. But, you know, if you notice the signs and get to the doctor, you will be okay again. I don't think that can really be stressed enough.
Yeah.
But
was it like sores or like bruising under your armpits and things like that? So any weird stuff going on and you're not feeling well, just go to the doctor probably. Weird bruises on your body and you're not feeling well, you don't want to mess with the plague.
Yeah, because it says, we thank modern protections like bug spray, flea treatment, and latex gloves for keeping us separated from the bacteria that transmits it.
So yeah, always wear gloves, I think, is what they're saying. Never not wear gloves.
Just rub Purell constantly.
That too. Can't hurt. That's just a good idea, Kevin. But you know what was not a good idea, as it turned out?
What would that be, Ken?
Well, there was a gentlemen who unfortunately did not survive an attempt at jumping a car over a drawbridge. Now this, I gotta say, always seemed like a good idea to me growing up. I can in some level appreciate the thinking that led them to attempt this, I suppose.
Yeah, it's one of those things that, having not been there for the situation, it's hard to rate the level of stupidity this falls under. Drawbridges.
How so, Kevin?
Well, I'm going to go into the physics of things here.
All right. Sorry. Didn't mean to jump the gun there.
Yeah. Now, if the bridge, typically at a crossing like that, the guard comes down before the action starts.
Right. The arm, the guard arm comes down.
Yeah, the guard arm comes down.
Yes.
So if you got there just as the guard arm came down and you had whoever was running shotgun run out and push the arm up, I would think that at that point, that's your best time to cross. When there is the least amount of gap and the highest ratio, you want more horizontal run than vertical run. Because I feel like when you start getting too vertical, you're just going to take off and you're going to not really make it. Like, you need a good launch angle is what I'm saying in this situation. So the earlier you get to it, the better. Like, if you did this, like, well after the bridge was starting to come up, then you're just being an idiot.
Now, I wonder how fast you would have to be going, though, Kevin. I mean, got to be really making some... And I think you're right, because especially, too, earlier on when the bridge is lifting, the gap is going to be smaller that you have to jump across. But as it gets, as the bridge is lifted higher, then the gap becomes wider and wider. And some bridges I've seen go quite high, so there's really no way that you could try to drive up it after a certain point.
Yeah, like there is upwards the 90-degree angle that you have to contend with.
Which is tough.
Yeah, it to me, at some juncture, you've just got to go, this situation is untenable, and I'm not going to jump this. So I don't know where these guys were to me in that process. And because there was an eyewitness that did see the person running shotgun get out of the car and raise the arm so that they could try to jump the bridge.
Right. Which...
But I still think it's a terrible idea because, A, I feel like I've seen a Mythbusters on this, and it really fucks your car up.
Oh, to land? Yeah.
Yeah, to land. Yeah, like any type of landing just really wrecks your car.
Yeah, presumably they're going to only have to wait, what, like 15 minutes max, would you think? Or maybe that's, maybe longer, but still, it's worth it to wait rather than
die,
bust up your car. Well, dying for sure. But even in the best case scenario, Kevin, I was like, I guess what I'm saying.
Yeah, like, I gotcha.
Like, the best case scenario for them involves their car being totally screwed up, which actually reminded me of
it being fished out of a river.
A video that we watched, in addition, I guess, to this article, about a couple stunts that looked like were done back in the '70s. The one stunt that we watched earlier, actually, the truck in this case completed the jump in a reasonable fashion, it seemed. But still, the axle was all screwed up and could not drive anymore. So, yeah, that checked out based on what we saw. That was also a pretty crazy video because of the ending stunt where...
Oh, yes.
Someone tried to jump over the St. Lawrence River... which was a mile wide in a rocket car, which is something that I had thought about since I was a young child.
I can't say I've really thought about jumping a river.
I thought about a rocket car for sure. Like,
oh, okay.
That would be cool. And it kind of was cool because it went super fast in the video. That was most impressive.
They did not plan things out very well. They duct taped wings onto the side of the car. Now, I would think that you would need some type of wing structure to help kind of... keep your vehicle steady. You know, if you're trying to go a mile,
yes, that's a ways in the air there. Yeah,
yeah, I would think that you would want some type of wings on your vehicle. So just duct taping some bullshit on there, right.
I mean,
does not seem like a good plan.
You're right, Kevin. I mean, the ramp was nowhere near a mile, so they're going much farther in the air than they are on the ground, and yet they had no way to control their flight through the air. On this rocket car. It reminded me a little bit of some of the early and like wacky attempts at flight that we see the clips of.
Right.
Something that, you know, has no possibility, you would say, of working, Or even if it did work, like there's no way to control the flight, say. Like
Yeah.
there were some people who did similar stuff with like rocket chairs or something ridiculous.
Oh, right.
It's like, okay, you're flying, great, but now you know, I think the Wright brothers were the first people to be like, okay, we need to figure out how to control this thing first, and then we're, you know, get up in the air. So yeah, these people did not really bother with the controlling part. And
no, not even a little bit.
They did have parachutes in the back, I guess, to their credit.
Yeah, much to their credit. They had a parachute for the vehicle itself and an ejection seat for the driver of the vehicle.
Oh, well, it didn't seem like
I feel like there was a second chute that came out there in that video.
Yeah, it looked like there might have been two. I thought they were both for the car, but one did not appear to fully release, and it actually seemed to release early too, so I think that screwed things up a little bit. But
well, that jump went horribly wrong.
Yeah, pretty almost much immediately.
Yeah, as soon as they were off the ramp, things did not go well.
It seemed like it caught air underneath it somehow and like lifted way up.
Oh yeah.
But then at the same time, like, it basically self-destructed because all of the parts flew off, like, the outside of it.
Right. Not just the fake wings that were duct tape on. There was a couple other items that came peeling off
like,
that
I think
immediately.
The side panels and hood, maybe.
Yeah.
But that guy was... I was reading a little bit more about that stunt, and, like, the guy who was originally going to do it canceled because there was like some kind of technical problem, and then like kind of without telling that guy, they found like a substitute stunt driver who agreed to do it, and probably not the best idea. At least according to the Wikipedia, the stunt driver's name was Kenny Powers, AKA,
Kenny fucking Powers.
Kenny fucking Powers from Eastbound and Down. Although, apparently a real person with that name. Although, like I said, it's on Wikipedia, so there's a chance that that is total BS. But that's what we get for moving away from print, Kevin.
Because print was always 100% reliable. That made it more real, man.
Yeah, anything you saw in print, you knew was true.
Oh boy. But yeah, all these things do. I'm actually kind of surprised that the jumping a mile thing hasn't tried to do that since then.
Like a real rocket car in a modern sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
It seems more achievable. It definitely seems more achievable than what they did.
yeah, failing immediately, I would think that there's some way to upgrade from failing immediately in this day and age.
Yeah, I was reading an article about some tests that people were doing with a vertical takeoff car that I think they said it was like a five-seater, but... you know, a different flight method here, not jet propulsion, but more of I think they had a series of rotor blades that kind of provided the lift, and it was electric engine. So the idea was that they were trying to make it environmentally friendly in some ways, but definitely a different idea of a flying car. This could be seen as an attempt to bring us a flying car, Kevin, but was not successful.
Well, I don't trust motherfuckers with cars on the ground, so I'm not ready for cars in the air.
Yeah, I mean, the accidents would be a lot worse. I'm not sure if people have thought about that yet, but yeah, you could cause an accident in the air that would then cause an accident on the ground, if you think about it.
Yes. Yeah.
Hopefully they can get some of these wrinkles worked out before then.
There are a lot of wrinkles to work out to have personnel aircraft.
I would kind of like, you know, and I feel like this is probably impractical, but what if you could have like giant catapults that would kind of fling things across the city, and then there would be nets on the other side, you know?
I guess I'm more for the Futurama setup where it's kind of like the tubes at the bank, where okay. It's like a pneumatic air gun type situation.
Like a personal Hyperloop thing?
Yeah, personal Hyperloop okay. type situation. Like, I'd be more for that. The catapulting sounds like it's fun. Like, especially, I would imagine you're going to need to use some type of a trebuchet type setup there.
That's what
to
I'm thinking.
To get a little extra... Well, I guess it depends upon what your distance is. For a longer distance, you're going to need a trebuchet, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I don't know what the maximum like force that a human body can you know take without being turned to jelly. But that would probably limit would limit your distance.
I don't think you're going to get over Mach 2 or anything like that in this thing. And obvious. Well, I was going to say it would help in urban areas, but I mean, you would think that'd help. Hey, man, I got to get to the other side of the farm. Catapult me over there. I mean,
I wouldn't
mind being catapulted from your house to my house. Like, I mean, that would save some hassle.
Yeah, and if there was like a landing area, you could have like some kind of inflatable like sumo suit that you were wearing. I don't know. you would bounce around like the Mars rover, and then you'd be there.
I'd need to set up a trampoline every time before I get shot over here, so that I can be received back. Well,
you'd probably want to wait at least half an hour after you ate, I'm guessing, because that's a pretty intense, intense ride there, gastronomically speaking.
Yeah, I would definitely be waiting at least a half an hour before doing that. I did enough stuff after dinner today that I would have been able to take the
this would have been catapult. A good day for the catapult.
Yeah.
I kind of want to calculate like how fast you would have to be launched in order to actually be able to get between our houses with the catapult. Whether that would even be feasible, I don't know.
Well, Ken, you can get back to us next week on that one.
All right, I'll do my best.
For this, to wrap up this show here, we will talk about 6-1 Pour, which is a recently concluded Columbus Beer Week. They do a collaboration beer here in town. And this one happens to be a collaborative hazy IPA with Key Lime. I know that the Key Lime has a little different flavor than your normal lime. I've got to admit, I like the hazy IPAs because they seem more refreshing to me. There's a little too much pucker in here for it to be refreshing to me. Like, I had one that was just like heavy on lemon this past weekend that I picked up on in Charlottesville, Virginia. And I like that a lot. The Key Lime, to me, is kind of the problem in this situation.
Yeah, I feel like usually it seems like you go with more of a lemon for your citrus flavor with the IPA. The lime is kind of an unusual choice. But, yeah. Hey, I say give it a shot. They gave it a shot. And I would probably agree with you, Kevin. It's not my favorite beer, but... it's something a little bit different, I guess.
Yeah, I do appreciate the lighter beers this time of the year. Like, I have definitely come to dig that. Because that's why I was more than happy to wait to take the Mr. Owl, the double porter, Imperial Porter that I brought over. Like, that's kind of a dark one, and it's a little heavy, and it... does not fit my attitude at the current moment.
Oh, okay. Well, then this worked out perfectly.
I do like running, even if I didn't like the citrus, I like running a little bit lighter and a little more summery this time. It's fucking hot out there. It's nice to cool down with a beverage with a little bit of those qualities.
Yeah, I agree. And I think I like it a little bit better this time that it's a little colder. The last time I tried it was not quite chilled enough yet. Sadly, I left another beer in the freezer for too long and it exploded. So, c'est la vie. But I think this was a limited production beer anyway, but don't feel like you need to try to go out and grab it. If you want something else, go for that instead.
Well, with that, I'm at DeFrango 11. He's at Gozer 33. The brand is at Stunt Granny. Rate and review us on iTunes, SoundCloud, or wherever you happen to listen to us. And with this, we say good night.
Indeed. Good night.